T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Midway.
The Midday Midway.
1, 2.
Midway. The most important of the year.
3, 4.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
5, 6, 7, 8.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
It's not 10. You see, you're on 10 here. Where can you go from there? Where? To 11. 11, exactly.
11.
Midway. So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
We went over yesterday and last night's Cubs game as it dragged on into sunset, and the various and sundry questionable moves, to say the least, made by Joe Maddon in trying to secure an important win. A Pyrrhic victory for the Cubs is they may have won the game, but they may have also become less likely to win a championship because of all that happened in the game, and there's been a lot to talk about. My takeaway is I'm a Joe Maddon fan, but he overcooked it yesterday.
Seemed that way.
It's a good chef, that gave you a bad meal, and it happens sometimes. Robert Mays talked football, Pete Futek college football, and a bunch of other things we already did.
In the 2001 Major League Baseball draft, the Mets had the 38th pick. They also had the 18th pick in an earlier round, but the 38th pick was a supplemental pick that they had for the loss of Mike Hampton. With that 38th overall pick, they took David Wright. David Wright was Captain America for a little while, right, with the World Baseball Classic, Team USA. He is coming back and will play a final game of his career September 29th.
A ceremonial game.
Against the Marlins. He's going to come back and play. He's got all kinds of back issues, or I guess really more accurately, he has a specific kind of back injury.
Spinal stenosis, I believe.
That has kept him from getting and staying in game shape for years, really, and something he's been fighting for quite some time. Other notable first-round picks in 2001, Joe Mauer went first, Mark Teixeira went fifth, Mark Pryor went second.
Joe Mauer also said to be considering hanging him up after this year.
Read about that as well. Wright's 50.4 career WAR is the third highest in the 2001, or from that first round of the 2001 draft. There is a really good piece, and I'll try and find it. I thought of this as I was kind of setting this up. There's a really good piece written, I think, Rick, we talked about this on Hit and Run a couple of years back. I think it was written in Grantland about how if the Mets don't give that, you know, long deal to Bonilla, they don't get David Wright. You know, it's all the different, you know, things that happened, the dominoes that fell that got them David Wright. But I'm amazed that David Wright still had any desire to play baseball, despite all his issues.
A career slash line of .296, .376, .491. OPS career of .867, an OPS plus career of .133. And if you want to know the 10 players most statistically
similar
to David Wright, they are from 10 to 1, the most similar: Larry Doby, Eric Chavez, Ray Lankford, Dante Bichette, Travis Fryman, Matt Kemp, Mike Lowell, Ken Caminiti, Ryan Zimmerman, and number one is Hanley Ramirez.
The good players.
That
is a list of damn good players. And remember,
I didn't say DGP. I said GP.
I said damn good players. Also, remember, the Mets moved the fences on him. They moved him out. But congrats to David Wright, and I hope the game goes perfectly. I hope he hits a homer, the whole thing. That's cool. That's very, very cool, and congrats to you on a great career.
An illegal exotic animal peddler was busted on Long Island with 11 lizards stashed in his car, including, but not limited to, poisonous Gila monsters that were in the middle of escaping when he was pulled over.
Wait. What?
Yeah, poisonous Gila monsters. I'm looking. There's a Rubbermaid container here.
Oh!
With three Gila monsters in there. Authorities have been investigating suspect Anthony Camerata's business partner, Doug Delacave, when they spotted the 27-year-old Camerata pulling out of Delacave's driveway in a 2002 Lincoln around 6 p.m. on Monday with the Gila monsters in the vehicle. So when Anthony was attempting to move the car out of the driveway, he had five beaded lizards, also the Mexican beaded lizard, also venomous, and two Gila monsters in the passenger rear compartment, as well as a third Gila. In the trunk, he had an American alligator and two dwarf caimans.
What the hell are we doing?
The Gilas were between 2 and 2.5 feet long. The alligator was 2.5 feet. Earlier in the day, authorities had raided Delacave's pet store in Levittown called Reptile Rage, where an...
oh, come on.
Ride the new Reptile Rage in Great America.
It's my favorite Metallica cover band.
I don't know, man. Just name the store something, two things you like. Well, I like reptiles. Rage is a big thing for... Reptile Rage. That's what we'll name the store.
And cheeseburgers. It's called Reptile Rage Cheeseburger. They found a 5.5-foot water monitor, one of the largest lizards in the world when fully grown, the second heaviest lizard in the world. The water monitor was being kept in an enclosure with an unlocked door that could be easily manipulated by the lizard, which had nails, approximately 4 inches in length.
So this guy was driving around with a death wish. In the form of lizards.
Authorities went to Delacave's home packing a warrant, and that's when they spotted Camerata with other illegal lizards classified as dangerous animals. Camerata also had a loaded handgun, a high-capacity magazine, and drugs.
And rage, apparently.
Go Bears!
Let's get it. He was booked on a slew of charges and held on $25,000 bond. That's Camerata. Delacave was also arrested and released on his own recognizance, but he should be pretty glad he got picked up, because otherwise he was going to be in a moving car. Look, I go crazy if there's a moth in the car, let alone three loose Gila monsters.
That is the worst way to try and recreate the end of Thelma and Louise you could think of. That's a terrible way to do it. Obviously, the Bears will play the Seahawks on Monday night. I don't know whether or not reportedly newly signed linebacker Michael Kendricks will be a part of that game. But Michael Kendricks is reportedly a newly signed linebacker for the Seattle Seahawks. You may be wondering, where have I heard his name before? Well, it would have been on Hard Knocks when in the final or penultimate episode of the season, I think it was the last episode of the season, we found out that the 27-year-old Michael Kendricks faces up to 25 years in prison for insider trading. He pleaded guilty to insider trading and is still going to play in the NFL, which, oddly, I'm fine with. I mean, you could do, I suppose, whatever you want up until the point where you're sentenced, which, by the way, is December 24th, I think,
if memory
serves.
But doesn't the NFL have to rule, because they can come in at any point and...
I assume that they could suspend him for whatever, but just remember that apparently it's fine. You don't think the NFL, you don't think the Seahawks cleared a signing with the NFL before they signed Michael Kendricks, who, remember, pleaded guilty to insider trading and faces up to 25 years in prison? I think, of course, they did. So that's fine. Sign a guy who's pleaded guilty of a crime for which he stands up to 25 years in prison, but Eric Reid and Colin Kaepernick can't get jobs. Are you kidding me?
What did you guys do? Well,
you're willing to take the PR hit.
We took a knee to protest racial injustice.
I took a lot of people for a lot of money. Oh, job for you. Bad. Bad for standing up for a thing you believe in.
I choked a woman and threw her down in a futon full of guns.
Oh, here's a job.
That's fine. Another piece of breaking news here. Bill Daley is running for mayor of Chicago.
Oh.
The former U.S. Commerce Secretary is going to make a formal announcement that he is going to seek the job his father held and his brother held.
With as many candidates as we have, we're just going to have a Royal Rumble, right?
Apparently.
Last man standing. It's like Thunderdome. That's how we're going to elect the new mayor.
Two men enter, one man leave. Master Blaster runs Bartertown. Right. What a horrible movie that was.
Awful. Loved every minute.
A man who admitted he drunkenly fired a shotgun inside his apartment because he feared there were clowns inside could spend the next 5 years in prison.
I get this guy.
This is from Berks County, Pennsylvania. Reading police didn't find anyone inside of 35-year-old Nathan Mathias' second-floor apartment. They say the shooting put his first-floor neighbor in danger. The Reading Eagle reports he was sentenced Monday to 22 months to 5 years in state prison after pleading guilty to discharging a firearm into an unrelated drunk driving charge. They found Mathias clutching a shotgun outside his house, claiming he was trying to shoot two small clowns. Mathias' attorney says his client wasn't trying to harm anyone, but was reacting to some type of hallucinatory event. Mathias took full responsibility and apologized.
I mean, that's just...
Listen, when it comes to clowns, shoot first, ask questions later.
Shoot to kill.
I am absolutely with this guy. Safety off, set phasers to kill.
Double tap.
Especially the small ones.
Oh,
the small clowns are much more dangerous because they're quicker.
You know where they get
to. They're harder to hit.
Hide in places.
They're harder to find. They pop out at you.
Yeah, I don't like the popping out. That's
bad. Like the one in Poltergeist. Yeah, I mean, that's really bad. So, look, I am on Team Nathan Mathias here. I also believe it was not some type of hallucinatory event because sometimes you get the disappearing small clowns, and those are even worse when they just sort of blink on and off and they're there. Then they go back to their dimension, mm-hmm. like Mr. Mixtleplick.
Yeah.
And you know, you say how to say his name backwards, then he goes back to the other dimension.
It's a very scary thing. Double tap.
Fifth dimension and members of the fifth dimension. So with this one, hey, look, don't punish him. Praise him. Laud him. Arm him. We need more people being this proactive in the war against small clowns.
I think that's all well-reasoned gun policy. Here's something that's not. I don't know what about our day means that we're reading a bunch of stories about people being irresponsible with guns.
Because we live in the United States.
Here's another one. This from the New York Post. Authorities say a Missouri man who shot himself in the genitals lied to investigators and said someone else shot him. The Columbia Daily Tribune reports that 19-year-old Taylor Joseph Guthrie is charged with a misdemeanor count of making a false report after he was
shot
wounded.
Myself in my nuts.
He was wounded in July at a mobile home park in Prathersville. A warrant has been issued for his arrest. Court documents say Guthrie told Boone County deputies that a suspect fired at him from the park entrance and fled. But deputies found a shell casing near where Guthrie had been standing, indicating the shot hadn't been fired from the park entrance. Guthrie later said he was actually retrieving the 9mm pistol from a car when it went off. The gun had been reported stolen from Memphis, Tennessee.
He couldn't have said that two small clowns just apparated there and shot him?
Right here in the genitals.
Right?
They shot me. The terrific shots, both of the small clowns.
All are.
Yeah.
That's why you got to get them first.
Well, they come out of the carnivals and with all the trick shot stuff.
Oh, yeah. They can
blow
out that.
They can also guess your weight really well.
They can blow out the red star with all the BB guns.
They have a fantastic, they're really good at the test your strength thing. They just stack on top of each other, swing that big mallet down. They always get the light.
They always pick the duck with the one rare number that gets you the giant stuffed animal, too.
Very good at throwing rings at milk jugs, all this kind of
stuff. I'm still bitter about that. I am still owed a pocket knife by some carny in Duluth, Minnesota. Not recently.
Well, you just went on this drive. I thought
we
maybe
did drive
you
through Duluth.
That's
we
what
did.
I said.
We
I thought maybe you were like, "Hey, do you want a sandwich? No, let's throw rings at milk jugs." Like I figured that was probably something in your delirium
this
of your drive.
This was a fly by night kind of low rent carnival
as opposed to the other ones.
Well, there's some that are well done, like the one that we.
I don't count state fairs though. State fairs are state fairs.
No, there's a group. Whoever does the Boys and Girls Club one over by Revere Park every year,
okay,
that's good. And it's expensive, too. You pay for quality.
Well,
it's like union labor and
you
stuff.
Get what you pay
and
for.
Actually, the guy calling the squirt gun horse race is really good.
Pro stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like, I think you get what you pay for.
All right.
But this was a low rent one, and all it was a 2x4, bunch of 2x4s on the ground with pocket knives stuck in the blade down, stuck in the wood. And
okay.
And you had to take a ring that was about the size of a silver dollar, and if you got the ring around a pocket knife, you won the pocket knife. Okay?
You weren't given the pocket knife?
And first shot, mundane sports achievement, ringer, and the guy goes, "You're over the line."
Mark it zero.
And I said, "No, I wasn't." "Yeah, you were over the line. It doesn't count." I was so pissed.
Kid, walk away. We've only got 5 of these, all right? We got to go all night.
It was a perfect shot. I mean, I just one in a million. You're over the line. That wasn't even close to being over the line. It's like an insurance company. They reject every claim no matter what.
Sorry, over the line.
Well, come on, man. So between that and the lifetime supply of Windex I never got, I'm still owed that, too, for winning the Dick Vitale Sound-alike contest.
I'm really glad that you've gotten over these things.
I've still got to go buy Windex, though. I didn't need to go buy a pocket knife every month.
When you get the lifetime supply of anything, thank you, Ed. When you get the lifetime supply of anything, do they just... You just get to go. You get a card. You get to go and buy it whenever you want.
What do they give you?
Would it be a completely
unreasonable amount of Windex?
And it's in a one giant bottle. Like, here it is. This is it, man.
I don't know.
You get to go wherever you want, but you got to take this bottle of Windex with you.
I won my year of free barbecue from
Real Urban Barbecue,
that wasn't an unlimited all month. That was an allotted $50 a month, if that gives any sort of marker.
But you got every bit of it. See, I think that whatever.
Is that a rhetorical question?
Yeah, I feel like it might have been different if it wasn't you that won it.
Whatever marketing company.
Oh, God, he won? Just make it $50.
You know how mad Schuster was to know that he was paying for me to eat?
That's great. Whatever marketing company set up the National Dick Vitale Soundalike Contest, talk about fly by night. I don't think they ever even were prepared to think about how they were going to give away a lifetime supply of Windex because they just didn't.
It's like Jackie Moon giving out corn dogs.
They just. I'd never heard from them. No phone calls were returned. And years later, I told Dick Vitale the story about it. And he was genuinely like, what do you mean? Oh, what are you talking? I feel terrible about that. What did he tell me? Are you serious? Are you serious? You never got it? Seriously? Oh, that's awful. That's awful, baby. I mean, he felt that. So let me get you a signed copy of my book. It's like, if you're ever in Sarasota, I'll take you to dinner.
I have some Windex in my car.
No, seriously, because when you get to Sarasota, call me up. I'll take you out to dinner. I feel terrible about that. I did. I was never in Sarasota. Okay. Actually, I was in Sarasota, but didn't call.
It's a non-expiring offer. So next time you go back to Sarasota, you've got a chance.
That's got a chance. God.
That is the Midday Midway. We do it every damn day here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Although, you know what? I should say we don't. The day after Bears games, we're eschewing the Midday Midway because we've got so much more to do. So 4 days out of five, you get the Midday Midway during the Bears season. Speaking of Bears, a couple of things we got to get to before we talk to Patrick Manley at noon and preview the Bears-Seahawks matchup coming up on Monday night. Mitch Trubisky spoke a little bit about his own performance and reviewed himself for everyone.
It's good.
Seeing as everyone else was reviewing him, and nationally speaking too, because the picture that Dan Durkin of The Athletic with a wide open Trey Burton in the end zone kind of went national. You know, we talked about it here on the show, and I'm not saying that's why, but it also went national because that's a kind of stark photo. He mentioned that in his own growth process, thought it was interesting, want to bring it back and talk about it some. Talk about the young second-year quarterback for the Chicago Bears.
And we weren't sure of his availability today, so we didn't promote it. But indeed, Jonah Carey is going to talk the National Baseball Picture with us at 11:40, awesome, coming up on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Tickets for the Chicago Wolves 25th anniversary season are on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. Be there for the home opener as the Wolves defend their back-to-back Central Division championships on October 13th at Allstate Arena. We mentioned before that Mitch Trubisky lets you in. Mitchell Trubisky is not afraid to tell you what's going on in his head and what his learning process is like.
I appreciate it. I told you when the season started, you know, we were talking about Matt Nagy and the same kind of transparency that he's kind of exhibited through this point of his Bears coaching career. And I just kind of said, well, enjoy it while it lasts. Being a little cynical, as I usually am. But I'm pretty surprised that it has lasted this long and seems to want to continue to last. With the both of them, it's honestly pretty impressive.
All right, Mitchell Trubisky in front of reporters, getting questions and answering them.
You spoke about pocket presence. You said happy feet the other night. Matt talked about the clock. How do you improve that in a game situation when you're trying to be more focused on what you're seeing and that type of thing?
One, it comes from me wanting to take care of the football, and then two, not taking sacks. So, yes, it helps our offense in some areas, but it could also get me into trouble when I'm moving sometimes when I don't need to. So I just got to find a happy medium. And in practice, it's just going to be pocket movement, moving around defenders in the pocket and continuing to keep my eyes downfield to find receivers. So you try to simulate that as much as possible, but the best place to do that is obviously the game. So I just take a bunch of notes on the game film and just keep in my head when would be a better time to stay in and move. But I'm going to continue to use my natural ability and keep plays alive because there could be a lot more big plays from scramble as well. But I'm trying to stay in the pocket, become a lot better passer in the pocket, and continue to just move around. Very subtle movements with calm feet to find receivers. So that'll be something I'll be working on probably the rest of my career going forward, but definitely more emphasis this week.
When you watched the film, what were your takeaways of the final couple minutes?
I wish I would have had a little bit different mindset going into that. I was thinking, try to make a big play, like win the game right here. And it should have been, for me personally, I think just like that completions, get one more completion, one more first down. And then once you get that first down, just another first down. Like we saw from the other team, you just dink it down underneath, a missed tackle could turn into a big play. So I should have had a more of a completion mindset instead of trying to do too much. And that comes from me. I just got to stay within myself, stay within the offense, five completions, and move it in the 2 minute drill. And it was a great learning experience. I don't think you'll ever get that exact situation in practice with the noise, the stage, and all that. So is a great learning opportunity for me, and definitely going to take with me. And I'm itching for the next 2 minute drill in practice and the next game whenever to prove myself and get the opportunity again. But I definitely have a new mindset and take care of the football, but just move the ball down the field. And we have a plan, but good learning experience overall. Did some good things, but definitely want to capitalize on more.
So you talk a lot about the learning experience from this game. How does it differ from some of the learning experiences you had last year and some of those close
and late games? It does, really. I think every day, every game is a good opportunity to learn and get better, and you're never the player you want to be yet. And I just feel like we were a lot closer this last game, and personally I felt I was a lot closer to, I knew what I had to do, I knew how to do it. I just didn't quite do it with execution, and just got to continue to play within myself and in the offense. So every game you're going to learn something, and for me it's all about how you react to that and how you learn from it and then put it behind you and don't dwell on it. So taking a lot of positives from the game and just trying to take that and move it on to the next one. But every game's you're going to learn something, so you just got to make sure it translates to the next one so you continue to grow and get better as a player.
What are some of the keys, what if a defense goes zone on you guys like the Packers did, to finding success against that kind of defense?
Yeah, definitely. You just got to have answers. Know where your answers are in your man plays, in your zone plays, in your checks. So we're studying a lot of film, getting ready. It's just having those answers when they throw at you. So we did a lot of good things this week that the Packers haven't shown what the defense coordinator has shown in the past. He threw a lot of new stuff at us, so we were able to adjust on the fly in between series in the game. And if that happens this game, well, then we'll have good experience for it. But you just got to trust your eyes, what you see. And for me, it goes back to just having calm feet in the pocket and trusting my eyes and just going where I need to go with the football. So I would say just recognizing coverage for us, man zone, and then just executing our play. Just it helps when you know exactly what you're doing and know where all your answers are. So that'll be a big emphasis from this week, just getting the ball to the playmakers.
Mitch, Matt just took us through the third down play on the second drive with ball end up going to Gabriel, and maybe it looked like for a second Kirk was open. Can you kind of take us through that play?
Yeah, I'm sure everyone saw what I saw, and they're like, oh, Mitch, throw the wide-open guy in the back of the end zone. And trust me, I wish I would. Tariq was the first option in the flat. And then it's one of those plays where you just got to, like, how risky are you going to be? Are you going to take care of the football? So I checked it down. Well, we lost 5 yards, but we got 3 points out of it and went up 10-0. So that was the big positive takeaway for me. But moving forward, if I want to evolve into the quarterback I want to be, you got to take that opportunity, and I got to anticipate that even more. So that wasn't something that happened in practice at all that week, but you got to know as a quarterback if that opens up, take your chances and get it to the guy wide open. But it's a little less wide open when you're playing at full motion on film. When you got the still picture, which I'm sure a lot of people saw, it looks like I don't know what I'm doing, but trust me, I mean, hard on myself. You want touchdowns, not field goals. I thought I put myself and my team in a good position in that instance. First quarter, check it down. 3 points. We're up 10-0.
Do you each game as part of a season-long process? Because the people watching you, every game is almost defining. You know, what you did against Green Bay is who you are. What's it like to kind of accept that reality, especially in situations like this where you're directly facing kind of public scrutiny?
That's a very good question. It's almost, I mean, for me, it's not accepting that reality. That's how it is on the outside. But for me, I can't let any game, any play define, I mean, who I am as a player or as a person. I mean, I'm continuing to grow and get better. Each opportunity is just another day to get better and continue to grow. But, I mean, that's how people are looking at it. We want immediate results, everybody, the media, the fans, myself. But unfortunately, that's not always part of it. So I got to just continue to work, get better every single day, and realize that that's the kind of level that we're at, and those are the expectations. But I'm not going to hold any extra pressure over my head or do anything more. I just got to do what I got to do, and hopefully people will understand. But, I mean, I think I understand the situation that I am and what all comes with it.
That is some of the best stuff I've ever heard from Mitchell Trubisky.
I agree.
Really interesting and open and honest about himself and how he felt about the play. Everybody saw the still photo. It's really good.
I was struck by something that came up a number of times in the audio, and Rick actually mentioned, I asked, hey, you know, is the sound from Mitch good? You know, can we play some of this? What do you want to do with it? And Rick's like, yeah, I'll put something together for it. And Rick mentioned after I think I came in again and I asked some other stupid question, but Rick mentioned you can hear over and over again, protect the ball, protect the ball, protect the ball. How much of that is a vestige of John Fox and being in that 1 year? And you got to wonder, and Mitch mentioned it too.
But if protect the ball means don't throw it to the guy wide open in the end zone, you're trying too hard to protect the ball.
How good is it? How bad is it? You know, there are good things about protecting the ball and having it always in your mind that you cannot turn this over versus where is the risk, right? And I think that's something that you and I talked about quite a bit in the preseason is the idea of completions, the idea of accuracy being something that can hold you back offensively. I mean, if you're just captain check down, right, and if completion percentages are the only thing that you're able to take care of and make sure happens offensively, then you're not pushing the ball down the field. You're not Alex Smith of last season. You're not Pat Mahomes in that offense the Chiefs showed, and I'm kind of simplifying things a little bit, that they showed last week. So, you know, finding that balance of protecting the ball and understanding where and when versus knowing when your shot needs to be taken. It's interesting.
He's Connor McKnight. I'm Dan Bernstein. Latest from Blackhawks practice, Corey Crawford has now finally publicly stated that his issue is related to a concussion that he suffered in December. He says it got progressively worse. It was time to sit out, and things never really got better. He said he is not better yet, and he is going to be out until he's better. So at least it's been said. At least now we don't have to say believed to be related to a head injury. I'm still told the situation is possibly more complicated than that, but it is, in his words, this is he is yet to return from a concussion that he suffered. This segment brought to you by Subway. Check out three signature wrap flavors to savor at Subway restaurants. Try the classic style of the turkey Italiano melt. Get yourself some bold taste with the Chipotle Southwest steak and cheese, or enjoy the tangy flavor of the buffalo chicken wrap. Subway, make it what you want. Limited time only at participating locations. We will talk baseball with Jonah Carey of CBS Sports next on the Bernstein and McKnight Show on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Jonah Carey.
Yeah, great to see you.
Me too. I don't know who you are, but it's great to see you.
CBS Sports and the Jonah Carey Podcast.
He's thrown his pillow, he's thrown his nightcap, and Yuppie's been thrown out of the ball game.
Tim Raines, enthusiast.
Tim Raines, yeah! Welcome to the Hall of Fame. Tim was rock solid playing.
Is that right, what?
Jonah Carey with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Jonah Carey's on Twitter, at Jonah Carey. He writes for CBS Sports, and the Jonah Carey Podcast is where you can hear him talk as well as right damn now on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Jonah, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Well, we have spent a lot of time looking at some curious managerial decisions made by Joe Maddon yesterday, hearkening back to the 2016 World Series and looking at the Pyrrhic victory of winning a game they felt they had to win, but also now being without their closer and trying to just make sense of Joe Maddon, the motivator, versus Joe Maddon, the tactician, and how we can reconcile all of it.
Yeah, it's funny. Joe Maddon is consistently inconsistent once you get to the latter stages of the season. He tends to map things out and kind of go with a system early in the year. And then when he gets to the end of the season and the postseason, he really does ride the hot hand. And it might be that that's something that's viable, the hot hand. You know, it's in sports, it's not typically something that analytical types go by. But it is the case, you know, he talked about it. He said, hey, listen, we're running on fumes at this point. We don't know how many pitchers we can rely on. And we see that every postseason. His bullpen basically shrinks to like two guys. He's like, okay, I can trust Montgomery and I can trust so-and-so, and that's all I got. And he won't go to guys. You know, a couple of years ago was Rondon was out of the picture, Strope was out of the picture. He wouldn't go to any of those guys. And he just said, all right, I'll go with this dude and this dude. And that's where we're at. I mean, that's why Strope ran the bases, because Strope has been pitching well. And he looks around his bullpen and he sees, you know, guys not performing. Maybe they're out of gas, whatever it is. He certainly has a better feel for that than, like, I do. I don't know. And so that's what he decides. I think there's something to the idea that we're in such an over-specialized game that a pitcher doing anything other than pitching risks injury. That's a whole other separate topic. But the bottom line here is he goes by his gut more often when the stakes are at their highest, and that has backfired on him multiple times.
I guess it's, you know, even the gut decision, which is something that I suppose with his track record you give him the credit for, or give them benefit of the doubt for. It's, you know, now because of this injury that did happen, this worst-case scenario that did happen, you've got a team that has limped through this schedule so far and now has to somehow survive the rest. His gut, those available for his gut decisions, that number has dwindled too.
Yeah, that's certainly true. You know, I mean, he obviously runs into trouble that way. I will point this out, though. Something that's not Joe Maddon's fault is the way the team has been hitting. I punched up, right before I came on, I punched up Fangraphs just to look at how are the Cubs doing over the last 7 days,
which covers six games. You're going to throw up if you do that.
It's very bad.
Okay, so Anthony Rizzo, this is six games, basically. 23 plate appearances. He's hitting .095 with no extra base hits. Daniel Murphy is hitting .100 with no extra base hits. Wilson Contreras hasn't had an extra base hit since, like, the Taft administration. Ian Happ doesn't have a hit at all. Albert Almora, 167 with no walks and no extra base hits. Addison Russell, 143 with no extra base hits. They've got two homers in the last week. This is the Cubs, the big bad Cubs, who are supposed to smash the ball all the time, and they're just not doing anything. And some of these teams are tough. Like, they've gone through a tough part of the schedule. Milwaukee's bullpen is devastating. The Nationals can pitch. You know, I understand all that, but that's a really tough stretch. And so once you get into that point where no matter what button you press, it doesn't work, you start doing things that are a little unconventional. Now, in the past with Joe Maddon, if it was June, it might be that he, whatever, bats Anthony Rizzo leadoff or something. But now when the stakes are at their highest and they're trying to win the damn division, it becomes more extreme, stuff like their pitcher actually running the bases when he shouldn't be.
Talking with Jonah Carey on Sports Radio 670, The Score. We were talking about David Wright earlier and the ceremonial return that he is going to have to say goodbye to baseball. And just looking at his numbers and looking at his stat comps, what a solid, good player he was. I mean, really just among those who were just very, very good players for a significant period of time. What's the takeaway with him? What's the story of David Wright?
It's two careers, right? I mean, he was just a devil. I mean, if he continued at that pace, he would have been a Hall of Famer. You know, he had, like, really, really good defense. Not quite Scott Rolen level, but pretty close to it. And just mashed every single season. Played in some pitcher-friendly parks and, you know, hitting 30-plus bombs and putting up 390 on base percentages every year. Playing at a defensive position that requires, you know, a high level of defensive excellence. That's hard to do. You know, you look at the history of third basemen, there actually aren't that many in the Hall of Fame. It's a pretty scarce category. I mean, Santo famously wasn't getting in, and you just have guys who peter out. Mike Schmidt is like a unicorn. You don't see guys hitting 500 bombs and playing gold glove defense and. And so that's where we were with Wright, and then you get to it, and just the number of injuries it's hard to think of another guy like that who had that run of excellence and then for years and years and years got injured. He has like Nick Johnson's injury record. I mean, like horrible, where it's like 4 or 5 years in a row where you can't rely on this guy to take the field at all, except that it's not Nick Johnson's performance record. It's the record of a guy who seemed like he was ticketed to the Hall of Fame. I honestly thought about this a little bit. I can't think of anybody in baseball history who really has that kind of trajectory, like sort of Dale Murphy, but Dale Murphy just became not a great player. It wasn't only injuries. Wright was able to play when he could play, but it was so seldom that he just kind of fell off the table. So it really is an anomaly. He's a one in a million kind of player, for better or for worse.
I'm trying to think. There's a name that always comes up when we start doing historical comps about a guy who started out as a great player and then played for a while, but just never sustained his early quality, and that was Vada Pinson.
That's a good one.
Yeah, Vada Pinson was fantastic. You know, all-star, you know, like third in MVP voting, and then just kind of got not as good, but at least, you know, he lasted until he was 36.
Yes, Cesar Cedeno did.
Yeah.
I mean, we're deep cutting a little bit here, and I think a lot of the listeners are going to be like, what? But yeah, I mean, there are guys that broke in that just kind of peaked early, and that does happen. But, you know, Pinson, Cedeno, these guys weren't snake bit the way that Wright was. It's just, it's such a weird thing, and you know, who knows what it is. I can remember it was a few years ago, and Wright showed up to spring training, and he was already a really strong dude, and the guy looked like the Hulk, you know, and is that the baseball physique you're supposed to have? Are you supposed to be lean and athletic? Are you supposed to be gigantically muscle-bound? I don't know. I think that it's not one size fits all, and you could be, you know, Barry Bonds and survive that way for a while, and you can also not survive that way for a while. Maybe playing a position like third base isn't conducive to that, and you need to have, you know, quicker twitch reflexes or whatever. Maybe it's just a single case, and that's the end of that. It's so hard to say exactly what it is, but it just didn't go right for him, and he tried all these things with his body, and he just couldn't figure it out.
Talking with Jonah Carey, CBS Sports, here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. If J.D. Martinez takes the Triple Crown, does he win an MVP?
I just wrote about this for Sportsnet.
That's why
he's not even in my top three. You know, and of course, I'm not the arbiter. I do have a vote this year, but it's for NL Manager of the Year, not for AL MVP. I mean, I'm associated with an NL market, that is. So it's, I'm not sure that we're going to see that anymore. I can remember Trout Cabrera, and it was such a divide in baseball because at that point there had been no Triple Crown for 45 years. And so it was just such a unicorn. Again, I'm using unicorn again. It was such a weird kind of thing that the baseball world was just like, well, he has to win. But the Triple Crown is one of those things that somebody decided a while ago that those are the three categories that we should go by. And I think that that's fading a little bit because you could do doubles, triples, and hit by a pitch. I mean, you could make up any three categories that you want. RBI are obviously team dependent. Homers are great. Batting average doesn't tell a full story, and that's that. So I think we're at the point now where we understand that there's more to it, and he's a designated hitter. I mean, he doesn't play the field. On his own team is a guy who, once you get rid of the Triple Crown stats and you just talk about offense, by park-adjusted offense, WRC plus or OPS plus, whatever you want to use, Mookie Betts has been a better offensive player this year than J.D. Martinez. And he's obviously a much better base runner, and he's the best defensive right fielder in the league and has been for 3 years. So I don't know how you could do that. And the reason that J.D. Martinez, if you want to talk about RBI, has all those RBI, is largely because Mookie Betts is always on base. He's going to score a billion zillion runs, much the same way Martinez is going to drive in a billion zillion runs. So I have a hard time with that. Off the top of my head, and I only mentioned Betts, Ramirez, and Trout above him. But I think I'd have Alex Bregman above J.D. Martinez. I'd have Frankie Lindor above J.D. Martinez. I might even have Blake Snell above J.D. Martinez and then a couple of those other AL pitchers. I think J.D. Martinez, if you talk about pure value, is probably about the seventh best player in the league this year. That's insane considering he might win the Triple Crown, but that's where we're at in this season.
Did you see this NL East occurrence coming at all? This doesn't usually happen like this. Atlanta's on a five-game heater. Philadelphia's lost five in a row. All of a sudden, that lead is 7.5 games for these young Braves, who are only the third team in history to have two players 21 or under that have already accrued at least three wins above replacement in Ronald Acuna Jr. and Ozzie Albies.
I mean, it's over. You know, it's like I've been asked this question on another show. How are the Braves preparing for the playoffs? We're already talking about, well, Folty and Sean Newcomb and these young guys who don't have big innings counts in the past, you need to take the foot off the accelerator, get them ready for the postseason. Jeez Louise. I mean, there's still a couple weeks left in the season, and it's done. That's shocking to me. And first of all, let me just say that a lot of credit goes to the predecessors of the current regime, which is John Coppolella and his staff. And Coppolella got maybe the biggest raw deal in baseball history. He is not Shoeless Joe Jackson. I do not understand how he got banned for life. I think it's a travesty. But anyway, those guys did such a good job of building up this organization. Folty was a trade acquisition. Newcomb was a trade acquisition. Obviously, they're the ones who scouted and picked up Acuna and so forth. And, you know, it really goes to the level of talent and the collection of talent that they came up with, along with, you know, a few choice acquisitions here or there, and some other guys like Camargo coming through, some lesser players really playing well too. So it's been really impressive, and it has been really surprising. I thought the Phillies would be contenders this year despite losing 96 last season. obviously they've fallen off, but I just didn't see the Braves coming. I think it was easier to sort of see it with Philly. I thought Nola could take the next step. Obviously he did. They had Hoskins, they had other guys, but the Braves really snuck up on us, really, really. And of course, the big story here, and I'll be writing about this before the end of the season, is the Nationals. I mean, the Bryce Harper era is about to end, probably, seven seasons, and what do you have to show for it? I mean, they did make the postseason a few times. They never won a playoff series with Bryce Harper there. Does that mean that it's over? You know, does that mean they can't go forward with Rendon and Strasburg and Scherzer and all that? I don't know. You know, the contracts are ballooning, and it's a weird era now in D.C. I mean, heck, maybe the Marlins and Mets are going to be good again before the Nationals get back to the postseason. It's really, really weird the way things transpire, and it goes to how quickly things can change. Oakland, of course, you know, has come back and been really strong. I'll tell you something. If I was putting money on next season, keep an eye on the San Diego Padres. I could see them being the next turnaround. They've quietly got a lot of good young position players. Things change in baseball. There's a lot of parity in baseball. And we talk about the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Dodgers and the Cubs and what have you, but there's a lot of stuff that happens after those big teams every single year that makes it exciting and makes things different.
Jonah, great talking with you. Appreciate it as always.
Thanks, fellas.
Jonah Carey, CBS Sports. Follow him on Twitter at Jonah Carey.
Let's get a scouting report on the Bears' upcoming opponent from no less a football authority than Patrick Manley.
Seems a good place to do it. That's next, Bernstein and McKnight.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.